ilk bir şey yapacağım.
Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become that you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, coming to you from Western North Carolina. AccuWindow forecast, 79 degrees and clear. Plenty of stars out tonight. The solar wind is a stout 327.5 kilometers per second. Sunspots 1106 and 1108 are prominent. And there is a slight chance of C-class flares from 1108. And we'll keep you posted on that. Don't worry about that. All of your electronic stuff is safe right now. Weather is doing some strange things, though. Why? Wow. Keeping the schedule we outlined in our series of books, The Ark of Millions of Years, I hope we didn't write the script for what's happening now, but it does seem like the events are tracking nicely. We had a killer tornado in New York, and Friday morning, right almost at the end of summer, it began snowing in Montana along the Rocky Mountain front early Friday morning. A rain-snow mix in and around Great Falls turned to all snow around 10 a.m. in some areas, up to an inch of accumulation may be possible throughout Friday. Kind of interesting. Everybody looked at their calendar and said, hey, what's going on? 2 to 4 inches at lower altitudes, 4 to 8 inches possible above 6,000 feet. Very strange weather going on now. NASA plans to begin preliminary work this fall on a dark energy mapping observatory, recommended in the National Research Council's latest 10-year plan for space and ground-based astronomy. Through full-scale development of the new flagship-class mission, we'll have to wait until the agency launches its $5 billion James Webb Space Telescope. Why the interest in dark energy? Well, it is twisting space-time as we get closer to the galactic plane, and no one predicted it. The discoveries of this telescope could fuel the program to begin populating other planets as this sector of space goes through tidal distortions. Scientists fear may send Earth into another dimension. Interesting. Procurement in the unclassified U.S. military space sector has come to a near standstill now that all major elements of the Pentagon satellite fleet replenishment effort are under contract. But the classified side of the ledger is still seeing significant activity with more on the horizon. Most of these secret programs have to do with optical imaging. Who are they looking at? Earth, mostly. Want to let you know, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is available on Kindle. We're brand new at this, so I guess you could call us Kindle Gardeners. So if you read books without using paper, we commend you, and you can do so by going to Amazon and just searching by the book, putting in Remembering the Future or my name, or by clicking the link at rememberingthefuturebook.com. Also, we'll be sending the discount code out this week for those people who bought the ebook. In another 2 days, the audiobook will be completed. We'll post it as soon as we can. So if you're not a good reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Just want to let you know, as you're getting your supplies together, making sure that you are not a burden to emergency preparedness staff. We want you to visit one of our sponsors, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust, who is a retired firefighter, and his friend is an active EMT, they started the company. Now, you must know that we have researched better than 30 different preparedness and supply companies all around the country. We chose them for three reasons. Number one is price. They have been able to package things together and really get the price where it's affordable. Why? Because these two have a mission. They want to make sure you are prepared. So whatever disaster happens, whether it's foul weather, whether it's an earthquake, a flood, or hopefully nothing more sinister than that, or maybe you just are out of work for a little while, at least you'll have the supplies so that you don't have to be a burden upon anybody else. Take care of your own. Take care of a neighbor. 1-800-PREPARE.com. And don't forget to click on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio. It's a short 30-minute version of the program. The more you click and the more your friends click, the better our chances are of syndication. That means we get to play on the airwaves. So let's spread the word. We need something positive out there late night. Phone lines will be open all night as we have our guest on. I will talk about her in a moment. 530-413-4511. If you are off planet, you can get to a cell phone tower. You can reach us. If you're east of Earth, 530-413-4515. And if you're west of Earth, 530-413-4520. Those of you that are going to step out away from your computer for a while, why don't you call us up on your cell phone and listen to the program? 712-432-0075 and just put in the access code 318116#. We'll bring those numbers to you again at the break. We'll be right back with our guest. Don't go away. One of the brightest and most talented and most dedicated teachers I've ever known, internationally renowned public speaker, radio talk host, hostess, and tremendous trainer when it comes to meditation, accessing the Akashic Records, and finding out about your true personal power, my friend, Maureen St. Germain. Welcome to the program, Maureen.
Thank you for having me, Brooks. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, you know, I love this age because we are connected all around the world. We have listeners in Japan and Australia and Florida and Canada and California all on with us at this very moment. And you are somewhere east of Earth on with us live. And you've been busy yourself. You just finished a training program with people, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I've been working all weekend long with Akashic Records Level 2, which trains people to read the Akashic Records for others. And it's sponsored by Akashic Records International, an organization that I founded. And we have a fabulous group of guides, as they are called, who guide people into the records and then take the information from their guides and record keepers and convey it to their client.
Well, this is powerful stuff. I've talked to a couple of friends of mine. One is Brent Miller, who you may or may not know him. He's a researcher, electrical engineer, produced a couple of videos. I asked him one time what the Akashic Records are, and I know out there in the metaphysical field, people are pretty familiar with this term. I get one definition one way, one another way. What is the Maureen St. Germain Akashic Record official description?
The Akashic Records, although it seems like it ought to be a place, is not. It is a place in non-physical reality. So although it's a place, as in the term, an area, at the same time it is non-physical. In other words, it's not part of our 3D world. Instead, it's on a dimensional plane called the 11th dimension. And the purpose of the Akashic Records is to serve as the point of registry for everything that has happened and all the possibilities of what may happen. So it is a point.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're you know, I'm a physicist, so when you start talking possibilities, that really gets us excited. Of course, we break out our scientific calculator and start getting ready to do permutations and combinations when we talk about possibilities. But, you know, when we talk about the potential of all potentialities, is this everything that has happened or everything we will think of?
That's a good question. It is not necessarily everything that could occur, but it very likely is everything that you would think of. And it's based on your energy, so it carries with you your signature. This is why I can open up your records with your permission, but you can't open up my records without my permission. So if I were reading for someone, let's say a woman wants to know about her husband, the information I can give her about him is limited to what would be in her field. So if something has to do with her, then it's very likely that we can get the information. But let's say her husband owns a business and she wants to know how it's going to do, or they've got this big investment. If she's not an owner in the business, the availability of information is limited unless it affects her deeply because she's an employee or some other reason. You know, so we can't just wildly or randomly say, I had a guy on a radio show ask me about Osama bin Laden. And what he failed to realize is, we, you, I, or the interviewer, have no authority to ask about that information because it's not our purview.
Yeah, I think you have to be a little creative how you ask the question. I have friends that have used for a long time the I Ching. Some people call it the I Ching. It is a very old, it's not really tarot cards. What you deal with are a series of 50 small reeds or sticks that you handle in your hands, and so your subconscious is involved in actually discerning the numerology of the question. But the combinations that are in the book that helps you decode these numbers, these patterns, aren't infinite, but they're almost infinite. And I have found friends that use the I Ching, or some people call it the I Ching, to problem solve, they have to be very careful how they ask the question. And you're exactly right. It has to be your involvement, or from your perspective, what are things that you can do or that you should be prepared for when the future unfolds before you.
Exactly. So part of what happens when a reading occurs is the guide leads the client into noticing what they're asking. So, for example, a person might ask, I'd like to know more about, I'm planning on moving in with my boyfriend, and I'd like to know more about that. And then, you know, as a reader, I might get information that says that that's not going to, it's not going to fulfill her wishes and dreams, but she has not asked me that. So as her guide, it's not necessarily my place to tell her unless she starts to ask questions in that direction. So as a guide, I can point out to her, perhaps you'd like to ask a different question that more accurately reflects what is it that you really want to know. And so the person asking the question then gets the opportunity to fine-tune their question and to hone in on, well, you know, is it my highest and best good just to proceed? And if you get a yes, then it doesn't matter whether it doesn't work out, because it's still in your highest and best good to proceed. And then some benefit will come of it that's worth the effort that you wouldn't, you know, take to do something like that.
Well, I'm wondering if, you know, the record is a present state of the energies that are out there vibrating in the universe.
That's very well said. That's exactly what it is. And when I have been physically behind the barrier between the record keepers, and that would be like the reference librarians and the actual records themselves, that field is extremely fluid. And the best way I know how to describe it is a wave pool. If you've ever been in a wave pool, you know, at an amusement park, and those waves start moving, you're in a contained field, yet the water is really moving in a very big way. And so the movement is part of the process. Movement becomes part of the living field because the records are living. And this is why it is not advisable for a person to just go into the Akashic Records on their own, because like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future 1, as his mother tried to kiss him, he's looking at the family photo and watching her disappear, himself disappear, rather. So you can change your...
Yeah, exactly. Who was it? Oh, yeah.
By being in that field. So you don't want to go into the field. You want to go to the gate, if you will, and that's why we use guides, to go to that doorway and work with your reference librarians, helping you get information you need.
Well, I think I'm going to take a complex picture and see if I can make it less complex. You've got this wave pool, and like a wave pool, it is basically the product of all the forces that are working in that pool at one time. You have the wall, the hydraulic wall that's moving, that's creating the waves. Then you have all the people in the pool, and they're splashing and moving around. And then you have the walls of the pool, and you have the grade of the floor. And in any case, you've got all these effects that are operating, and what you end up riding in the pool is the average of all those forces in the water. Now, let's just think of the water as sound, okay? Like in a symphony or something. You have all these instruments. You've got high-pitched violins, and you have piccolos, and then you've got baritones, and you've got bass saxes, and all of the cello and everything working. But the composer has managed to coordinate all the music so that it makes this beautiful sound, which you enjoy. And I dare say, I don't know a single person that's not emotionally touched, especially if they listen to a symphony live. That being said, perhaps this Akashic record, this Akashic room, this wave pool, is not so harmonious of an environment because there's no real composer. There's just a whole bunch of people playing instruments.
A jazz troupe. They know how to work with one another. They know familiar tunes that they do with each other, but the improvisation is always going.
That's a perfect word. It is a wave of improvisation. And so if the untrained were to go in there and try to pick out some melody or start snapping their fingers to some beat, they're going to be frustrated because it probably doesn't exist on that form. You've got to put some kind of energy into that that creates a resonance that will manifest something out of that mishmash of chaos that produces some kind of result for you, right?
Yes. And...
You can't just sit back as
the observer, even going in. I can tell you that if an observer saw, perhaps, some outrageous way their life ended, and they were observing all the players, because from the Akashic Records you could see all the players, so you would know who the perpetrator of this drastic event might be. You might see, you know, the motives behind others who would set it up. And you start to see that, and your physical emotion at the observation of that might cause you to react in such a way that it would impact that field, which is why we always work with guides in that way.
Sure. Yeah, we were talking earlier in the week, and we were mentioning the movie Next with Nicolas Cage in it. And in the opening narration of the movie, he says, "The future changes just because you looked at it."
Yeah. Well, and as a scientist, you would call it the observation effect. And I guess in physics, don't you have a term for it?
Yeah, we call it the observation effect. It's a pain in the butt because what we really want to do is we want to...
I was thinking of the Heisman principle. I want to say Heisman. That's the award.
Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Right, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which says that an object cannot be both measured and its speed and location cannot be measured at the same time.
That's right.
Once you do one, the other is impacted by that the act of measuring. Yeah.
Right.
Interference.
That's,
yeah.
And you know, we experimentally prove that in maybe not freshman physics, but perhaps sophomore physics. We in optics experiments, we can prove it by measuring the spin of a photon, for instance, before it goes through a slit. And then forms waves and interferes with itself, making interference patterns. We could make it fall out of wave function and become a particle, which some would argue is the act of manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it by accident in physics, and we don't like it. But you know, you and I have done a fair amount of study into making those observations on purpose to have an effect by design. So when we see events happen, like, you know, some people say, well, the crucifixion happened of Christ, or the atonement of Jesus had to be entered into the Akashic record so that the pattern made it possible for other beings to do the same thing.
I'm not so sure. I don't think it was the matter of the crucifixion. I think it was the matter of forgiveness that was required.
I like it. But, you know, there are a lot of people that just focus on one aspect or another of great
deeds. The crucifixion was that particular generation's version of the ultimate humiliation and punishment. On another planet, maybe the avatar would be crushed to death. Wouldn't matter. The killing of the messenger instead of receiving the message would be the metaphor. And there are some that say that Jesus Christ never really died on the cross, but simply went through the crucifixion and was pulled off the cross, still breathing, and resuscitated. So I've never really explored that too deeply, so I don't know that I have any other information other than to raise this question. But
well,
in my mind is the myth that drives the understanding of consciousness more than the actual act. And again, if you go into the records, that would be true, because there could be many ways that a situation could end that would be similar and cause the same effect in the people around that situation. And so the actual detail of how becomes less of a need to know as much, and the emotion around it becomes more the need to know, so that the emotion can be healed and the planet can evolve. I believe that emotion is the driving force of our return back to God.
Yes, I find that when people focus more on their version of whatever the accurate event is instead of the message, it starts a feeling of hatred and conflict and jealousy and prejudice and all kinds of other things. But when they focus on the actual feeling of the amount of care one being could have for all other beings on the earth, then it has quite the opposite effect. And that's kind of what I try to focus on, less on whatever might be scriptural, non-scriptural, historic, non-historic. Is really irrelevant. It's how I feel about the story and the message and what it does for me personally.
And it turns out that that can change. I will tell you from my own experience and with my students as well that we have found that as you shift and change, a story that existed in your consciousness literally changes. The record changes as you heal and become more connected to your divinity and more connected to your unconditional love. Then when you retell the story, let's say a space of 6 months or 6 years go by, you've evolved, you've changed, you've understood consciousness in a new way, and you are much more connected to your own wisdom, and you tell the same story that maybe you told 6 years ago, and as you hear yourself tell it, you don't notice that it sounds any different, but then when you're laying in bed that night, you think to yourself, oh my, I've never told it that way. And you begin to realize that the record changed because your heart changed. And you accessed a version of you that was more evolved, that had the experience at a more evolved way.
Interesting. I have heard people say that you can read the same historic event, or you can read the same scripture, or what, doesn't matter what scripture or what book it's in, and you can read it five different times and at five different times in your life. And because of what you're going through in your life, what strains are on you, what you're focused on, what matters to you at that time, the passage has a different meaning for you. And I've heard it said that sometimes you just have to read that scripture or that line with the spirit with which it was written, and then it will open up to you.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. I rather think that it is the personal connection as well. So it isn't just one side of it, the writer or the spirit in which it was written, but it is also the reader who adds his or her experience of reading it that helps to create the perception that in that moment serves them.
Yes, I've had academic discussions with people about scriptures over the years, and I've actually heard people say that. It doesn't say that in my Bible.
Well, yeah, of course, there's lots of people who are working with Bibles that have been changed or redone by various translators, and of course, all of that is subject to translation from the original Aramaic. And we all know, you know, I recorded Aramaic and then Greek and then English.
Yeah, she broke up a little bit there. We may have lost her. I'm not exactly sure. It started breaking up. Could be the internet connection. Maybe we'll try calling her back, or maybe it'll straighten itself out here in a second. Interesting connection, and I'm not really trying to split hairs with Maureen, but I'm trying to lay a foundation here because we're going to go into some pretty complex stuff here. And, you know, I expect you to call in. I expect you to have powerful thoughts about this because we're about to crack open some stuff that really has meaning for us today. And it has meaning for us in the next couple of years. So I want you to stay tuned. We'll try to get to Maureen back here in just a second. It was just a little garble in the internet connection. Hey, it happens, okay? This is live internet radio, and we have complex connections, which we're taking for granted. Usually we have pretty good audio, even if we're talking to somebody in Japan or Australia or the UK. But sometimes somebody or somewhere, the bandwidth gets a little infringed upon, and it can drop a call. So we'll get her back here in just a second. It's not a problem. In fact, it might even be me that's not on the air, trying to see if I can get a hold of the studio. Nope, we're still on. It looks like we lost her, so he's going to try and get her back. It'll be cool. So if you have any questions about the Akashic Records, or you have any experience with it, any thoughts about it. We're going to finish talking about this here in about 20 minutes, and then we're going to move on to energy fields, manipulation of those energy fields, and then connecting those fields to Earth itself, between us and Earth and the heavens, and we'll see what happens. The number here is 530-413-4511, anywhere off planet. So, by the way, the solar wind is a little low right now, no risk of flares. There are no meteor showers, so you could be out there a ways, far away from the cell phone tower. That's okay. Just boost the power a little bit. 530-413-4511. East of Earth, it is 530-413-4515. West of Earth, 530-413-4520. And if you're stepping away from the computer here shortly, we're live between 8 and 11 Eastern Time on Sundays. Just give us a call with your cell phone, 712-432-0075. Dial the access code 318-116-pound. And you can listen to the program live on your Bluetooth or in your automobile. It's very cool. We're trying to bring more and more features so that you can enjoy the program live. If you're an archive listener, we highly encourage you to check the status of your archive and renew that archive. You know, we're coming up on our 1,000th hour of archives with guests from all over the world. By the way, we are working on the 2007 archives. They do exist, not on the server. We don't know why they're not on the server, but we do have them on an external hard drive. But as you may well know, LG hard drives are not compatible with Dell computers. So I have to use another computer to get those records off of that hard drive. I will re-upload them. And if, in case you don't want to listen to them on our program, you can always go to bbsradio.com and you can access the archives there. They never lose them, and everything is good. So we now have our guest back. Welcome back, Maureen. Just one of those crazy phases of the moon or something. Sometimes it knocks internet phone connections out. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Oh, we deal with this from time to time on especially our program, because it's 3 hours long, so the odds of something going awry are pretty good. Usually we go without a hitch, but our audience is kind of used to the live feel of internet radio. It's less, well, it is digital, but it's less, it's more raw and more real, I guess, than listening to canned broadcasts. When we talk about the Akashic Records and what is recorded there and how it is ever-changing, whether we look into the future or whether we look into the past, when we look, when we go there with a guide, our observation of that past or that future, for that matter, empowers us with new knowledge. And what you're, I guess, supposed to do is use that new knowledge to make a course correction in your life, or maybe a decision that could make a difference whether you go left or right or forward or backward. So that means that the record is also going to change just because you observed it and you're getting ready to make changes based upon that new empowered knowledge. So this can get really, really complicated. How does somebody navigate this?
Well, first of all, I want to be really clear that an Akashic Record reading is not a psychic reading. And although information about the future can come forward, the purpose of going into the records is very directly related to your initial descriptive, which is course correction, and to give the individual knowledge that saves them from moving into an area that maybe part of them wants to do and the other part of them doesn't feel that's right. And so it really validates what they probably knew anyway and supports them following their inner wisdom that they maybe haven't even told anyone. So with that said, then an Akashic Record reading will empower someone. Sometimes you get information that helps you prepare for an event. For example, I was giving a reading to a woman who was a Tibetan nun, and she was asking something along the lines of her future, and the record keepers were very clear that she was embarking upon a cycle of time that would be very difficult for her. Now, as a Akashic Records guide, I will tell you that even giving that level of information with that kind of, I'll use the word negative twist, is uncomfortable for me, but it's very clear I'm supposed to do it, and so I'm paying attention to that. So she immediately wanted to know for how long and when would it start. And the record keepers were very clear that they needed to convey a number of pieces of information first, and then they would get into the detail of how long she could expect it to last. Now, a person has free will, and a person can use their free will, as you say, to make a course correction. So a person could choose to move through these difficulties faster or with more love and grace, and perhaps it would shorten it, because if there's a series of things you must learn or are choosing to learn for yourself, maybe you can learn them more easily if you know they're coming and facing you, because you're not going to offer the resistance you might if you didn't know it was going to happen.
Well, I can see on a more generic level, if you're going to make a business venture, you're going to say, I'm going to buy this business and I want to know if it's going to be a good investment, a good life change for me. I could see that more generic thing, because that's how it's going to affect you. You could get words back like great success or disaster or danger or failure. And then you could say, well, gee, I don't want to fail. Maybe there are some unforeseen things that I'm not aware of. I haven't done due diligence properly. So maybe I'm going to look at it again.
Exactly. You know, one time I had a man come in, and one of the things that happens with the Akashic Records guides that I work with is I teach them to do what I call opening remarks. So before a client can even ask any questions, the guide is instructed to give information that comes in. We call it a download or opening remarks. And that's given without any information about the client. And I can give you an example where a man came into my office and sat down, and once we opened his records, the record keepers showed me something very specific, and so I said to him, are you thinking about moving away? And he lived in New York, where I live, and he said, yes, very first question out of the chute. And then the record keepers said, we would prefer you stay in the area. There is something important for you to do here. On another occasion, a woman came to me and was determined to rent a two-bedroom apartment and to have a roommate. She picked out this ideal candidate who seemed perfect for her, and she was very enthusiastic. It was a friend of a friend, and she asked how it would go with this new roommate. And the record keeper said, well, it'll be fine until the luster wears off. And she said, luster? What luster? Does that mean it's not going to last? And they said, no. And she said, well, when will he leave? And they said, in July. And she said, of what year? Because at that moment it was May. And she could not fathom somebody would move in May and leave in July. She did not believe. She couldn't get her arms around that as a possibility. So she went ahead with the arrangements. And sure enough, in July, the man, you know, did some weird things and dropped out, didn't pay his rent, and moved away.
Wow.
Sometimes predictive information comes in, but it's not like the primary piece. It's more about adjunct information, if that makes sense.
No, I of course it makes sense. Absolutely. Now, one of the things that people are really concerned about now, and you know that my co-author and I, E.J. Clark, wrote a book on 2012 in the year 2005, again in 2006, and then in 2008 the final book was released, or I say the final, the third book in the series. The fourth one's actually on the way to the printer, called Update. And now, I mean, well, at the time there were maybe I don't know, a dozen or so titles out there on 2012. Now there are like 2,000 titles out there on 2012. People really want to know what's going to go on in 2012. And frankly, most of the people that I've talked to are pretty tired of the opportunists jumping on the bandwagon saying, 2012 this, come to my workshop. 2012 this, come to my conference, buy my book, buy my tape, buy my movie. But people are still interested in it. So what can you tell us about what the Akashic Records say will happen in 2012 to Earth, to everyone?
Well, I haven't asked Mother Earth lately, but the last time I checked, we were given information that said we were well underway with the transformation that Earth has undertaken in order for Earth and its inhabitants to move to a great golden age. And interestingly enough, when you were reading your weather report and you were commenting on scientists are afraid that we're going to move to another dimension, I thought, that kind of agrees with what I was getting, that we could just literally jump dimensions and leave behind much of the terrible things that we see happening as potentialities. When I finished up the book, Beyond the Flower of Life, a book that's available also on Amazon.com and also on Kindle, I opened the records for the purpose of asking that question, and the answer was that the purpose of 2012 was to raise people's awareness, and that from the perspective of the work that I do, the primary purpose of the 2012 awakening, as I would call it, is to raise people's consciousness, not only for themselves, but for humanity as a collective. And you hit the nail on the head when you said, if you were to buy these things, let's say survival things, it might not be for you. It might be for a friend. And when we had the Y2K incident, that's the most recent, so-called calamity or issue that came up in consciousness and also was being addressed by the physical community, I was told, I asked, should I stock up on any supplies? No. Should I stock up on extra food? No. Should I stock up on water? No. So then all of my friends said, oh, that must mean there won't be anything. And I said, well, it means that either there won't be anything or that I'll be at someone's house who has already addressed this issue.
Ah, yeah, exactly right.
So I say to people, if you feeling that you should take advantage of the opportunity to be more well prepared, whether it's food supplies or a generator, then that's probably what you need to do. And if you're being guided to be more focused on your spiritual resourcefulness and your spiritual practices, because that is also a form of preparedness, then that's what you should do.
Yes, we talk about that from time to time. People call in and say, what should I do? How do I get prepared? And, we could talk about temporal preparedness. You can talk about a little extra food, a little extra water, store an old pair of tennis shoes in that book bag near the front door because you're going to need something comfortable to walk out in. Don't put a pair of new shoes in there because you might have to break them in and walk 100 miles. You never know.
Right.
Those of you that do live in New York, like Maureen, if everybody tried to leave New York City at the same time, you're going to be walking. It's just cars don't move in that area. And it's like that in just about any big city. If you don't believe me, go back and look at the news footage of when Katrina hit and find out how many people ran out of gas on the freeways because they only had a half a tank and they were actually idling for so long trying to get out of the city that they ran out of gas. And, of course, once a few hundred cars do that, you can't even get the tow trucks to the cars that have run out to get them out of the way, and everything stops. That's just the way it is. So, you might want to think about that. Now, when we talk about what changes Mother Earth is going to go through we talk about this dimensional shift. We're building up to it now. We're going through the episodes of resonance as Earth, in whatever consciousness situation it is right now, with now almost 7 billion of us alive on the Earth, having our way with it, is resonating with the galactic plane. So we're going to see earthquakes and tsunamis and storms and, sure, summertime snow, and very strange things in diverse places. It's not as if we don't know that this stuff is supposed to happen. We just don't really know why it's supposed to happen. Now you know. It's the neighborhood, okay? However, the last few times Earth has gone through this neighborhood, she did so virtually alone. Now she has 7 billion souls alive on her, sentient beings, conscious beings, whether they're conscious or not. What I think Maureen's wanting to do, and what I'm wanting her to do, is to awaken as many of those beings as possible so that we can change the course of those events as the Earth goes through them. Maybe that's why we're here.
Precisely. I think you've said it beautifully, and it makes my heart sing to be able to be part of the bigger picture and help people awaken to their own connection, to their own guidance, so much so that fear is no longer an issue. And doing what your guidance is becomes primary and central and focused. You know, there is such a practical benefit to learning how to connect with your higher self and being able to have that ongoing communion with your own God connection. Something as simple as, you know, as a mom, as a single mom of 4 kids, I will never forget the time I was on my way home from work, and I kept a full-time job and was a spiritual teacher for over 9 years while I did both to support my family and, you know, pursue this other avocation. And I was on my way home from work one day, and all the grocery stores and everything were all before my home because my home was on the edge of the countryside. So I'm being told to go to the grocery store. Well, I didn't feel like going to the grocery store. I was tired. I wanted to go home and get in my, you know, play clothes and cook dinner and take care of my children and go to bed. No, stop at the grocery store. Well, I don't feel like it. Stop at the grocery store. Okay, fine. I'm stopping at the grocery store. Once I walked in, why am I here? You're here to buy tuna fish. No, tuna fish. I don't need tuna fish. I bought it last week. Are you having tuna fish casserole for dinner? Yes. Then buy tuna fish. Okay, fine. I'm buying tuna fish. And, of course, when I got home, there was no tuna fish in the cupboard. And if you had 4 teenage sons at home, you would understand why the tuna fish could disappear. Especially
very
the
quickly,
cat
especially if you have chips in the house. I mean, they're eating machines. They eat their weight in groceries. I had 4 kids. I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well,
right.
Interesting
so,
stuff.
Something very practical. Sometimes you get told to do something which makes no sense, but you can check in and validate it. And once you get that information, then you can ask with absolute certainty. I had a woman call me. Actually, she emailed me first and asked for my phone number in Paris and then asked me to join her for lunch. And she said, the reason I wanted to take you to lunch is because I wanted to thank you. And as a transplant from New York to Paris, I wanted you to know how much it means to me that I could learn how to connect with my higher self and make business decisions. And she said, all my friends will say, oh, that'll never work. And they'll say, why do you want to do that? And she says, I will check in with my higher self. And if it says I'm supposed to do it, I do it. And then when it works, they go, how did you know that time it was going to work? And she says, I always ask my higher self, and my higher self tells me the answer.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been to several of your classes, and one of the things that I employ all the time, even in business, is I make my judgments, and of course, you know, I'm a pretty energetic person, so there's not too much moss grows under my feet. Every once in a while, I get into a situation where things are not working out quite as I envisioned them, or as they were revealed to me. And you gave me a very neat question. So I usually find a bench or a chair or something and sit down for a moment, start up my Merkaba, and I ask the question, what's going on?
What's going on?
That is the coolest, because it opens this channel and somebody or some energy steps in and says, well, you drove instead of flew, or I asked you to get up 30 minutes early and you didn't, you know, those kinds of things. And now, boy, I listen to those little tiny things that happen throughout the day. You know, you really should email Mike today. Why? I haven't communicated with Mike in 6 weeks. Email him today. Something happened. You need to email him. You need to get on his front burner again today. So I email him. Boom, like 60 seconds later, oh, I'm glad you emailed. This just came up, and I couldn't find your email address. I'm going to send this to you. Wow. I mean, just amazing stuff like that.
Now, the interesting thing, and I want to offer some clarity on this question of what's going on, is after quite a bit of experience with this, it occurred to me that the what's going on question is the only non-pejorative question out there. Every other question has some bias to it. Who took the cookies? Why did this happen? How did this happen? All of these questions lead you at the egoic level to make a decision to act upon this new information. But when you say what's going on, it's like the windshield wipers come on, the field clears, and it gives you the full story. So I say to people, anytime something happens that defies explanation, anything that happens that defies explanation, and you ask that question, what's going on, you will get the information you seek. It is even more clear and more vivid when you've developed your connection with your Merkaba and your higher self. But the question stands as a remarkable tool.
I also want to add that you can end up in what you think is a blind alley. And you say to yourself, oh, how did I end up here? I mean, I followed every intuition. I followed it perfectly. Why did I bring this upon myself? Why am I at the edge of scarcity again? Well, you have to remember that this is a path. And everything you do will eventually affect the universe. Or everything you don't do will also affect the universe that you're asked to do. If you don't do it, it's going to have an effect. It's not that you're down a blind alley. It's that you have learned something from this experience that is going to help you with the next phase. Now, it might be that you learned a person's name or a company name or a strategy, but you also learned what not to do. So if you're placed in that situation again, this time it's going to be for real. This time it's going to be for a lot of money, or it's going to involve the livelihood of your employees. This time you'll know what to do because you've already been through that experience now. You've had a test run, a dry run, and you're empowered now with this new knowledge. Am I pretty close on that?
Yes, indeed. And you know, it leads me to want to talk in great detail about the multiple versions of you and what I have discovered regarding that.
It's only a 3-hour program, Marina.
So maybe in the next hour we can get into that a little more deeply, and I can share with you some of the things that have so deeply impacted me and help people to begin to understand that as the veil thins and we become more connected with our divinity, and this happens for everyone automatically, but those who are choosing to do it as a practice get to be at the front of the line.
The key word is do.
Is very powerful.
Yeah, don't sit back as a spectator watching other people do it. Do. All right, so let's take a quick 6-minute break. Let everybody get a glass of water, you know, readjust your seatbelt because this plane's getting ready to take off. We'll be back with more Marine Saint Germain on X Squared Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. It's only been about 3 minutes, but that's okay. Those of you that are listening to the archives, you're not going to know the difference anyway. The reason I'm coming back early is I want to let you know we've got a couple of seats left on our upcoming Egypt tour. So if you're interested in going to Egypt, not as a tourist, but on a yacht, sailing the Nile for 12 days, then why don't you go to X Squared Radio, click on the Egypt Trip Tour there, that's on the right-hand side, and contact us, because if you feel the call, it's time to go to Egypt, believe me, the time is right. If you feel that feeling, you need to be going with us. John Riley and I are going to be leading a very small group, only 18 people, on a very ancient path through Egypt, not by bus, not by car, but by yacht. You're going to see islands in the middle of the Nile that haven't changed in probably 3,000 years, except for the satellite dishes. Living soil on these islands. So why don't you come with us if you feel a call? Go ahead and click on that and get a hold of us. Also want to let you know, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is now out on Amazon, in print. All you have to do is put in the search words, Remembering the Future, or my name, and Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, will come up. Now, This book is self-help with a New Age twist. That's the best way I can describe it. Yes, there's a little bit of math in it. You know, if I wrote it, it's going to have some in it. But it is definitely a book about time travel, and guess what? It is not nonfiction. This book is not fiction. It's true. So you want to pick this book up. Inexpensive. I think they've got it out there for $15.95. Why don't you go to Amazon, tell your friends about it. Let's see if we can't get this book in the top 10 on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Make a difference out there. Remember the future, the physics of the soul and time travel. My guest tonight is my good friend, longtime friend, Maureen St. Germain, also my teacher, in a style of meditation called Flower of Life. If you read the book, you will notice that the last chapter in the book gives you a brief, and I use that with a small b, brief introduction to Flower of Life meditation. Why? Because part of the thing you're going to have to do when reading this book is to begin listening to the effect that you are having on the universe. As you send your intention out there in the universe, you're like a music playing in that quantum foam. Things are going to resonate with whatever it is you're doing, for good or for ill. And when those resonations come back to you, you're going to have to know what they sound like. You're going to have to know when they arrive. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to add your tiny little bit of energy to it to get the resonance going to manifest what it is you're trying to manifest. Now, we hope that you manifest good things, prosperous things, and abundance. That's how the law of attraction works for those of us that are trying to manifest great things. If you're trying to manifest something dark, it'll work for you too, but we would prefer that you don't buy the book. Anyway, that's just my preference. The words are out there. You can gain them for yourselves and learn as you may. Let's go ahead and also talk about Maureen St. Germain's website. It is Transformational Enterprises is the name of her company. The website is MaureenStGermain.com. That's Maureen, just like M-A-U-R-E-E-N, and then Saint, like S-T, and then Germain, G-E-R-M-A-I-N.com. That will get you to her website. You're going to find all kinds of wonderful things to buy there. And I recommend you buy one of each, but for sure, you should get the CD called Merkaba 2. What this will do is it will guide you, as I was guided, my first class, in Merkaba meditation. And you can follow the pictures that are in the book, and you can get a good working version of the meditation. I recommend do that for about 6 weeks and then get a hold of Maureen and take a class. You'll find out the little things you've been doing wrong with it, and it will really open up for you and become a tool for you for the rest of your life, really for the greatness of your life. Remember the future, the physics of the soul and time travel, and featured in the book is the Merkaba 2 CD. This is an audio CD that walks you through word by word, sound by sound, through the meditation. Believe me, for busy people like me, 17 breaths and you're in. We'll be back in 40 seconds with our guest, Maureen St. Germain. Don't go away. Space might well be the final frontier, but eternity is its playground. And although some people might think you have to die to get there, I don't believe that. I don't think you do either, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. I think we're right in the middle of it somewhere. And you're here with us tonight on X Squared Radio, and we're talking to one of the world experts on how to access it. Welcome back, Maureen.
Thank you. It's been a great time already, and we've only been on the show an hour.
I know. This show is like 3 hours, and it goes by in 15 minutes. Okay, we're going to talk about in this hour, this is where we kind of ratchet it up and lift the wheels off a little bit. That's why we recommend people wear a seatbelt when they listen to the program. Once we know that this Akashic record is there, all this extra information is there, all this access to what we call source is there. And we talked briefly about this Merkaba meditation, this flower of life meditation. Let's talk a little bit about the energy fields that go with it, why we should be aware of it, and how we can master it, maybe with the first half hour, and then we'll talk about what this has to do with what is really, other than 2012, I can't think of a single word that's being used more in science than the word consciousness. So let's talk a little bit about Merkaba and Flower of Life meditation. What is it? Who started it? How did it come about? How old is this?
Well, the Merkaba meditation, as it is known in modern day terms, was created by a man by the name of Dronvalo Melchizedek. And Dronvalo is my teacher. And after he taught several thousand people, he decided he wanted to focus exclusively on advanced work. And he formed a group of interested persons like myself who agreed to be facilitators of the Merkaba meditation. And I have been teaching it actively since 1995. The Merkaba itself is a field that exists around the physical body. Everyone has this field. It's based on geometry, based on what we call sacred geometry. This field is learned, a person learns to turn it on in the process of learning the Merkaba. So the actual meditation is a process which allows a person or teaches a person to turn on or activate this field, which in fact allows that person to then become fifth dimensional or more evolved than they can be without it. So it's a counter-rotating field of light, and it's complicated enough that it is recommended that you take a class, and it is easy enough once you learn it, like riding a bicycle, that once you master it, it will always be with you. It only takes 5 minutes to do, and if you decide to take a class, you'll spend maybe 20 hours altogether learning it. And you'll learn quite a few other things if you take the class with me, because I also teach people how to connect with your higher self, because once you've activated your Merkaba, it's so much easier to connect with your higher self. And from that vantage point, you get the information you need to know to make it easier to run your life. Now, Brooks and I both have extremely busy lives, and we're pulled in many different directions with many different kinds of things going on. And I am happy to hear what your experience is, Brooks, but my experience is that when I began doing the Merkaba, my ability for precision, my ability to get it right the first time, my ability to land in the right spot, or better yet, land in a spot that was auspicious, jumped dramatically. And my students tell me, although I've never experimented with this myself, that when they let the Merkaba field go inactive, or they let it go down, kind of like in Star Trek, the fields are down, when they allow this field, energetic field to stop being supported, they can feel the difference. And things start to collapse, and circumstances don't go as well, and so on.
Well, you start going through situations randomly, and you start being acted upon by the universe instead of acting upon the universe. You and I took, you know, both of our first trips to Tibet, and this was no pleasure cruise. This was, I think it was in April in Tibet. Now, you get off the plane, you're at 11,500 feet. You're also in a country that's been occupied by Communist China since 1959. So it's not as though every secret is going to open itself up to every tourist that happens to show up in Tibet. But A, we weren't tourists, and B, we activated our Merkaba every single morning as a group, not the entire group, but certain individuals in the group, every morning before we went out. And that's why we were able to get photographs of things that have not been seen by anyone since the occupation in 1959.
This is true. This is true. There was one incident with our guide who had been trying to reach a contact he had in the Fotola Palace for days upon days. Since before the trip began, he had been trying to reach this man and could not reach him. And he said with great apology, "Maureen, usually this man can find a way to let us see some of these places that are locked from the general public, but I can't seem to find him. He doesn't seem to answer my phone calls. I've tried every possible means I know of to reach him. He's just not showing up. I don't know what's happened to him." And the day we were at the Fotola Palace, as we walked up those grand stairs, and there are many of them, whose path did we cross but the man he sought to meet?
And it was completely random. It wasn't like we had a rendezvous set up. You know, when you're walking upstairs and you're already, believe me, at 11,500 feet, you come from roughly sea level to that. It takes several days to acclimate. There's no air up there, people. You're on the edge of the world up there. So we get to this top. Some of us are, you know, carrying small backpacks with cameras and, you know, various things in them that we want to take, record books and things or notebooks. We get to the top, and around the panic bars of some doors that have been added to the Fotola to keep tourists in the hallway instead of going down these side corridors, around the panic bars is wrapped a chain with a padlock, and there's a Chinese guard in front of it. There's no way we're getting past that doorway. But we walked past it, and all of a sudden our guide taps us on the shoulder and says, "I have no idea why, nobody knows, but let's not look a gift horse in the mouth. They're going to open the door for us. Let's go." So in we went.
It was quite amazing. And this kind of magic happens on all of the sacred journeys that we do. And I have found that it's as if the universe recognizes those spiritual seekers who are of pure heart and desire to serve. Now, while we were in that very sacred place, and it was the stupa of one of the most well-known Dalai Lamas, I was told to stand in a specific spot and hold an energetic position and to do an energetic work, which I'm not going to get into too much detail. But I wonder if you remember, Brooks, after I did that, I looked at you and I said, "Stand here." And as I pointed to the location, there was a mark on the floor that I had not seen.
Yes, there was what we would call a swastika. It was probably 4 feet in diameter, and it was actually carved into the granite floor. And in the center of this design was a great big piece of turquoise. And now I got to tell you, this had nothing to do with the Nazis or anything like that. But this design probably goes back to the 7th century, way, way long time ago. And I asked our guide what it was, and he said it was a representation of the Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly. And it's actually a borrowed symbol that was used by the Nazis rather than the other way around. And it was used because it was so powerful.
Now, the stupa that we were looking at, it literally has not been seen by Western eyes since before 1960. We're talking about 4,300 pounds of gold, more than 10,000 gems on this thing, and it is pointed at a design which has been painted on the ceiling, which looks like a four-dimensional stargate. And the strangest thing about the stupa, I didn't know what a stupa was from a pine tree, but I'll tell you what it looked like to me. It looked like a Tesla coil.
Mm-hmm. Now, just for the sake of your audience, a stupa is the way that a sage or saint is buried, And we are actually, we're using the word buried loosely. It is the actual relic of the saint or sage, the Lama, if you will, the great Lama. And it's like a great big statue, and inside of that statue is their body that's been mummified, and then the statue is built around the body. And so the entire body becomes a relic that becomes part of what's now called the stupa. And the stupa represents the entire element that is wanted, is desired to be used to allow the seeker, the spiritual seeker, to gaze upon and gain some kind of knowledge or experience that will help them on their path.
Well, I like it. And pilgrims come, and I use that term, really doesn't give description to what these people do. Some of them walk clear across the country. Some of them sort of go like an inchworm. They have pads or blocks that they strap to their hands and their knees, and they actually kneel and then go completely prostrate on the ground and then stand back up, and they go from their village all the way to these holy sites as a pilgrimage once in their life. To see these people make this trek to come here, to get these answers, to get this connection, is really inspirational.
Now, you know, it's we could talk all night about Tibet, but I really want to stay true to what you originally planned for us in this cycle of time, and talk a little more about the Merkaba and why it's so important for people to learn it and why it is so useful. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about it as a vehicle, because it is your light body. It is your ascension body. I joke around and say, you know, imagine a little boy in a tuxedo and see him at a wedding, and he's going to deliver that ring on the pillow to the bride and to the groom, and the groom is going to put it on the bride. And then after the wedding, the party begins, and he runs and tears his pants, and he spills cake on his lapel. And that's us. When we put on the Merkaba, when we put on the garment of ascension, we look like an ascended being until we mess it up. And that's why learning the Merkaba is so powerful, because it's as if we get to put on a fresh tuxedo every day and look like that grown-up or that evolved being and be that evolved being in the moment until it goes permanent. And the best example I can explain of what it means to have your Merkaba go permanent is to think of William Shatner. Every time I see him in a business suit, I feel confused. And I feel confused because I just can't accept him in that new role, because he has become Captain Kirk to me.
Exactly.
So the Merkaba, worn daily, becomes you, and you become it.
Well, the scriptures are live with talk, and even the Kabbalah and the Sefer Yetzirah and the Popol Vuh are alive with talk about these spiritual garments that holy beings wear. And we've tried to duplicate them with robes, and we've tried to duplicate them with, you know, various things in white or in silver or whatever. But the real thing is energy. The real thing isn't made of anything of this world. It is an energy that we can command.
That's true. That's so true. You know, in the descriptive of the Dead Sea Scrolls that describes the Merkava, as it is known in the Hebrew tradition, it is written that the minister of the glorious faith is in the abode of the gods of knowledge, fallen down before him, and the cherubim uttering blessings. And as they rise up, there is a divine small voice and loud praise. There is a divine small voice as they fold their wings. And it goes on to say the cherubim bless the image of the throne chariot, Merkava, above the firmament, and they praise the majesty of the fiery firmament beneath the seat of glory. And this goes on, this text goes on to describe what the ancients saw that the Merkava looked like, and they describe it as a wheel within a wheel turning in a counter-rotating direction. The ancients may not have had the capacity for understanding a three-dimensional object, or in this case, perhaps it's a fourth-dimensional object, but they certainly describe what the Merkava is to us today.
Well, you know, we think we know it all. We have the internet. We've got BlackBerry. We got iPad. We don't need all that stuff. We can use fortune tellers and pontificators and gurus of various kinds to tell us where we should put our money. But do you really have someone who can sit down with you and tell you what your optimum life trajectory is, what your true purpose is? Or your true talent, why you came here to the earth, what the purpose of life is? I talk to people from all walks of life. And either they've stopped thinking about it because they're so frustrated that they either didn't make it or that they have made it, but they don't feel fulfilled, either underemployed or they're working in a job they hate and they just can't wait to retire so they can fish for the rest of their life or golf for the rest of their life. And believe me, you want to know what hell is? That's what hell is. And yet, when I talk to them about energy, and I talk to them about manipulating, or I guess I shouldn't use that word manipulating, commanding the energy around you, learning how to interact your conscious mind with that energy field that is a part of you, whether you want to believe it or not, their eyes begin to open. They begin to see, you know what, that kind of makes sense to me. You know, we are really in a peculiar position nationally and even on the earth. We have so much judgment going on. We have one religion condemning another religion. Even in our own nation, we have factions who judge one another or prejudge one another based on their religion or the color of their skin or where they live in the country or how much money they have. I have more money than you. Therefore, I am a better person than you. We have judgment going on all the time. But I want to talk a little bit, Maureen, about, because this Merkava is so important, about the real judgment that takes place. Who really does the judging of each individual?
Well, I believe we're our own judge. And
exactly.
I believe
right.
That when we are in that space of connecting with our own guides, they're going to show us our life and we're going to see it. And suddenly we are going to be observing our choices and our behaviors. You know, Danyon Brinkley talks about, but when he worked as an assassin, how he, you know, committed certain crimes, and then when he went through one of the three deaths that he went through, he could see that man's life, he could see their family, he could see so many other facets of it, and it changed his entire perspective on it. I have another story of a teacher of the Merkava who died on the massage table and went through 9 different versions of death from other lifetimes. And then after that process, she was told by her guides that she was clearing up some of the negative emotion around each of those deaths. And as she tells this story, I'm listening to her and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And I'm hanging on every word of hers. And then she said, well, he went on to say that even though your life as you know it has ended, there's still work that you could do if you'd like to go back. And I'm thinking, wow, I never thought of it that way. And then she repeats that she says to the guide, well, I don't know. You know, I have a bad back. I have these problems with these organs, and I'm overweight. And as she's saying this, the guide then says back to her, well, The weight will fall off over the next 10 years. All your internal organs are 100% clear, and your back will heal in the next 3 months. And I'm thinking to myself, she's dead, and she's negotiating. I want to learn how to do that. And so she then proceeds to say, you know, I'm still not convinced I should go back. I always wanted to know what I should do next, if I could have that. And as she said this, I said to myself, you know, I want that. And my birthday's next month. I think I'm going to ask for that for my birthday. So a year later, we're sitting around the table again, this group of people who are all facilitators of the Merkaba, and we're comparing notes. And she proceeds to tell her story, and I tell mine. And suddenly someone says, well, you know, I'm getting information about, you know, 6 weeks out in advance. And I can tell 6 weeks out in advance what's going to happen. And without skipping a beat, both this woman and I said in unison, oh, well, my information's coming in on a need-to-know basis. And when she said that, I burst out laughing as I said it with her, because I thought the only way we could have said that phrase in unison is if it were true that I had received the gift she had asked for. So I think of the judgment, and I have such joy and laughter around possibilities that people haven't even thought of.
I wonder if some of our listeners are out there who have had things revealed to them. What responsibility do you feel when you receive that information? Also, we asked the question about judgment. You know, who does the judging? And I think Maureen got it right. We judge ourselves. And that judgment is instantaneous. As we darken ourselves by our own hatreds and jealousies and envies of one another, the judgment is immediate upon our total energy as a being. If we seek the benefit of others, the welfare of others, we love ourselves, then that also has an effect on the total energy. And I'm speaking from a physics point of view as well. The net energy of our total being, that is to say the biological transducer, which you call the body, and the energy that it takes to animate it, which you might call the soul, is a total energy set. And that total energy can be elevated to very high levels of vibration and purity, or descended to very low vibrations, even an absence of light. And that judgment is instantaneous, and we do it for ourselves.
It's all true. It's all true. And, you know, we do it daily when we judge each other, and we do it at the end if we feel we need that. And it's a wise person who recognizes that there is wisdom in understanding and allowing ourselves to see what is in front of us from another vantage point besides the one we currently hold.
Well, if we work with our Merkaba, we become aware of it, we become trained with it, we know how to activate it, how to program it. If we do that as a people, and I don't mean a few hundred, maybe a few thousand, maybe a few million people learn how to do it, are we affecting the Merkaba of the earth as well?
Yes and no. As we look at the Merkaba of the earth, the Merkaba of the Earth has a very specific agenda to create a level of purity within the Earth and on the Earth. And it's actually waiting on us to catch up. And once we reach a certain number of people, as you described, millions, perhaps billions of people, then the planet Earth will be able to express itself as the most evolved Earth it could be without going through massive Earth changes. So just like you can be on a railroad and jump tracks from one expression and one set of directions to another, it is totally possible to have a person headed for what we would call a collision or some kind of crazy thing that would be the end, and jump tracks and have a different experience as the train continues on a new path that wasn't there a minute ago. So I believe that activating your Merkaba as an individual creates the opportunity for the Earth then to move to a new level. So does it impact it? Yes, but more as an indirect outcome, which is a space is created for the expansion or activation of Mother Earth.
Well, as people are communicating with their guides or they're gaining information, I would caution that, you know, remember what Maureen said on a need-to-know basis. That doesn't mean that when Maureen finds out that, you know, a plane is going to crash in downtown New York, that she gets a hold of the New York Times or goes on Fox News and tells everyone in the world that a plane is going to crash in downtown New York, because that's not her responsibility. But her responsibility might be to call up her friends and say, hey, by the way, why don't you go up to Washington today and stay out of New York, because I just have a feeling something's going to happen downtown, and get her friends and acquaintances and whatever out of harm's way. So if you've got information that you've gotten from the Akashic Records that doesn't deal directly with you and you only, I would caution you about hitting the airwaves and start talking about all these prophecies, because you're going to affect the universe if you do that. Anyway, we have a caller on the line, Scott from Florida. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I just wanted to mention an interesting event that happened to me. I was asking for answers back in June of 2008. I paid off a car that I had at the time. It was an Intrepid, and I was curious how much longer it was going to last, and I was also kind of antsy about getting a more fuel-efficient car. And so I asked generally how much longer my car had, and I got the answer August. And it was, I thought, oh my gosh, I only have 3 more months. Well, anyway, August came and went, and I kind of forgot about it. But then the next year, in August, something happened. In fact, it was the first week of September that my car, the head gaskets, both of them blew. And basically the engine needed to be replaced, and so on and so forth. After I drove it its last leg into Dodge dealership service department on Labor Day weekend, and I realized that I had to think on my feet, and unless I was going to just buy another car right then and there. I test drove several cars, and prior to that date, I had also asked what my next car was going to look like, and they said it was going to be white with beige interior, to focus on a white and beige interior car. So I drove several trucks and a Ford Edge and a Nissan Sentra or Maxima, and I wasn't really happy with what I was seeing, so I walked next door to Nissan, and there was one Versa left, and it was white with beige interior. And I test drove that car, and it was what I was thinking of getting because it was so good on gas mileage things just seemed to line up for me in that regard. And next time I'll ask more specifically about which year when I ask questions of a pointed nature. I was wondering if Ms. Maureen could talk a little bit about the Merkaba in terms of does it involve geometry and so on and so forth, because I have a pendulum that is a macabre shape, and I was wondering if that involves that sort of thing.
Well, the macabre shape is so very popular because people recognize it as familiar even when they have no reason to know that it's familiar. It's a bit like all the studies that have been done about the rectangle that's also known as the golden ratio. And there's studies that have been done that say if you look at a square all the way to a double square, and in some point in between that represents what's called the golden mean or the golden ratio rectangle, that becomes the favorite 80% of the time. So your attraction to your pendulum that's in the shape of a Merkaba is no accident. It means that you are being called at some level to learn the Merkaba so that you can get this kind of information even more easily than you already are. You know, many people that come into my class, in fact, most of the people who come to my class already have pretty well-developed psychic gifts. They have a good understanding of spiritual words, and they're familiar with concepts about energy, and they often get intuitive information that's quite accurate, but they don't have the ability to get 100% accuracy, or they don't have the ability to have 100% reliability. And when you have an activated Merkaba and a higher self connection, their reliability goes to 100%.
Wow.
And even when you don't know that you know, you will say something that is 100% accurate. You know, I have a story of a young designer, very highly paid designer who works for a major, major department store in the United States. He's one of the top executives. And he goes to China to work with them on the designs of the furniture that they order and the quality that they do. And he was in China last year, and he called me to tell the story to me specifically when he got back. He said, I was in China, and I was looking at this one piece of furniture, and I was probably 20 feet away, and something wasn't right. And I kind of checked in, and I asked, what's wrong? And I could see that it seemed like it was a little bit off. So I asked how much it was off. It was off 1/4 of an inch. And so from about 20 feet away, he could tell that this table was off by 1/4 of an inch. So he said to them, 1/4 of an inch. And they said, no, that's not true. That table's not off. It's perfectly square. And he said, oh, no, it's off. Go measure it. And these Chinese were astounded that this young man, age 33, could produce that kind of accuracy. But he's giggling to me as he says, Maureen, all I did was ask my higher self. My higher self said, yeah, it is off 1/4 of an inch.
Yeah, I have had exactly that same experience in a meeting, not with Chinese, but with Japanese on a machine. They were going to buy another $500,000 laser marking machine to cut barcodes into a ceramic catalytic converter, which was larger than the one that they currently made. And I looked at it, and I did exactly the same thing Maureen taught me to do. I said, what's wrong with this? Something isn't right with this. What's going on? And the thought came back, rotate the catalytic converter 15 degrees, and it will fit the existing machine. Because the catalytic converter was oval in shape, and they were aligning it straight up and down with the length, you know, the longest way, trying to fit through the machine. So the new catalytic converter, same configuration, only it was a larger oval. And so I said, rotate the catalytic converter 15 degrees. So the guy, it was up on the AutoCAD, up on the screen. He highlighted the AutoCAD, told it to rotate 15 degrees. It rotated, and it fit the existing jig. Saved the company $500,000.
Magic, magic, magic.
Can you talk about your classes, Ms. Maureen, in terms of where they meet? Are they in New York City or...
I teach worldwide, and you probably can find a class near you. I can tell you in the next 6 months I will be in Eastern Seaboard, West Coast of U.S. and Canada. So if you will check my website, www.maureensaintgermain.com, MaureenStGermain.com, you can find a complete listing of all my workshops.
And I highly recommend them. Not just one. Go ahead and take all three and go through the advanced stuff. Because you learn not just the basics. You actually get into some very advanced things. And once you're at that level of sensitivity to energy that's going on around you and in you, and you keep it activated. Don't let it get tired or old. Keep it activated. You'll be tapped in. It's like having an extra cell phone.
And the difference is that when you would ask that question about your car, the true answer of August of next year would have come through. It reminded me of a story that I experienced when I had written yet another tuition check for one of my sons who wasn't particularly prompt at saying thanks, Mom, or calling me or checking out how I was doing or anything. And I remember kind of feeling really low because at that exact moment, I was a little low on funds, and last week I'd written a big check for $2,000, and I was kind of feeling like, what was I thinking, and all of that. And so in my desperation, I said to myself, I want to know when my son's going to appreciate me. And I heard in 2000, whatever the year was. And it made me burst out laughing because that was like 7 years from now. And I was hoping it would be more like 7 minutes from now.
I gotcha. Oh, that's so good.
And I will tell you that that information caused me to change my own energy towards this son. And I began to laugh about my own, you know, set of desires upon the situation and just took a laissez-faire attitude about it instead of being attached to being appreciated. And it didn't take 7 years. It took only a few years. And what a lovely surprise. And how did it change? It goes back to the beginning of the show when Brooks and I were talking about changing the future with information from the future.
That's right. You remember the future and now you're empowered. And you make another choice. You choose another future.
It's so a fabulous, fabulous set of skills to be able to get this kind of information. Now, another thing about the Merkaba that happens once you activate and you become connected to it, what happens is your energy then is in alignment with everything that's in alignment with what you desire or what you're choosing to do. So what happens is doors open for you that you didn't necessarily try to open, and you begin to align with opportunities that other people don't seem to get. And it's because your Merkaba is completely aligned to what it is that you are about and what it is that you have outcomes that are needed. You know, I'm so touched by the fact that Brooks, who is a man who is in the manufacturing business as well as all these other things, had the opportunity to reach some very high officials in a very short period of time. And you say to yourself, well, how did he get in front of that large body of people? How did he pull that off? And the answer isn't just that he knew the right people or he landed in the right spot. It's the energy field that is his that aligns him with the expression of what it is that he is about, which causes opportunities to open up that you could not have imagined. It allows you to have the best time, not just a good time, but the best time and the ideal opportunities. It doesn't mean your life is without mistake. It doesn't mean that your life is without trouble. You know, I love to tell the story of how I was on an airplane coming home from the West Coast, and it was at a time when I lived in Wisconsin, and I got off the plane, and I'd been flying all night, and I saw a familiar face from the airline, and she said, how are you doing this, Maureen? And I said, I'm doing pretty good, considering this is my day from hell, because I have to get on another plane in a couple of hours and fly to the East Coast. And as soon as I said that, I thought, why did I say that? That's a crazy thing to say. So I immediately stopped and said, well, actually, I'm actually having a day of heaven on earth because this, I'm flying with United. And she laughed and I laughed and we went on our merry ways. Only I came home to an inch of water in my basement and I could hear water running and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. It was literally coming from a broken pipe between the walls. We turned the water off. I called my neighbor. He came over and he said, I'll call the plumber. You go ahead and do your repack. I called the airline. They gave me a flight an hour or two later. The plumber came when he said he would. I asked my higher self where he should drill the hole. I was 2 inches away from where the hole was so they could easily fix it, only damaging one wall. He wanted to go on a higher floor. All of these things happened with great grace and ease. The airline agreed to give me the later flight without a penalty. I made my bank deposit. I made my mailing. Everything was amazingly smooth in spite of this craziness with this broken pipe. So on my way home from the bank, my suitcase is in the car, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I could have made my flight if all I needed is an extra hour. The phone is ringing when I get home. It's United Airlines, and they say both of our feeder flights from Madison to Chicago are running late today. If you take the later flight, like you're booked for, you will miss your connection to the East Coast. Is there any way you can make the earlier flight, which is now leaving an hour later, which is about an hour from now? And the answer was, yes, I can. And I did. And I got on the plane, and I asked, what is it that I did? What is it that I did that caused everything to fall into place in spite of the craziness? And the answer was, you asked for a day of heaven on earth. So then every time I had a crazy day coming, you know, I could see I've got a lot going on, I've got to have things fall into place, blah, 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 I would ask for a day of heaven on earth. The third time I did this, it dawned on me, I could ask for a day of heaven on earth every day. And so I do. And you can too.
Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff. All right, Scott, are you still there? Okay, let's go ahead and get John from Vancouver on the line. Welcome to the program, John.
Hi, Brooks.
How are you, sir?
Well, pretty good. The reason I'm calling in is I'm an artist, and I've been working with the Merkaba shape. I've been painting it, and I've created 3D sculptures, like rod and sphere kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I became aware of it. There's another name for the Merkaba, which I'd like Maureen to talk about, and that's Metatron's Cube. And to me, they're very close. So does she have a comment about Metatron's Cube?
Metatron's Cube is one of the shapes that comes out of the system of the Flower of Life. And
yeah, well, that's how I got it. That's the process that I used to come
right.
to that.
So Metatron's Cube represents the shape that holds all of the platonic solids, not just the Merkaba. So the Merkaba
okay.
can be built from any one of the platonic solids. And just for the sake of your audience, the platonic solids are a cube, a tetrahedron, an icosahedron, a dodecahedron, and an octahedron. So the definition of a platonic solid is a shape that has the same face in all directions and the same angle in all directions. That produces a shape that will inscribe a sphere. So Metatron's Cube contains all of those shapes at some angle or another. So it is a three-dimensional portrayal with a two-dimensional representation. In other words, Metatron's Cube is a drawing on a flat piece of paper that, if you allow perspective into your eyes and allow your eyes to soften, you can begin to see all of the platonic solids that come out of Metatron's Cube. And while it is possible to create a Merkaba from any one of the platonic solids, the Merkaba, as taught by Drumbelow Melchizedek, which is the Merkaba that I teach, that Merkaba is the simplest form available to learn, which is why it is enormously popular and tremendously successful for all of us to use, because it's so easy after you learn the hard parts.
Yeah, I would like to add, too, that, you know, when we move from two-dimensional space to three-dimensional space, even when it comes to molecules, the tetrahedron is the first shape. It's the first stable shape that we see in molecules or crystals as we begin to put them together. So it's really the gateway from flat two-dimensional space to more dynamic three-dimensional space.
Well, Brooks, you know, I've been building these things and I've been painting these shapes. Maybe I'll just photograph them and send them to you.
Oh, that would
be
cool.
I understand what Maureen said and what you said. I know, totally, because I've been involved in this process for some time. And I'm thinking of
Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where Richard Dreyfuss builds the Devil's Tower and sculpts it in his basement. And that's why he understands how to climb the darn thing, because everybody else has been painting it flat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I imagine for you, John, it's immensely satisfying at the soul level to be working with this shape, because it's your heart's desire. And it's probably attracting a lot of attention. And even the people who are attracted to it might not know why, but it will open them up.
Yeah. Well, my 3D sculpture is really beautiful. And when I show people, they get a sense of how beautiful it is, because you've got the three tetrahedrons doing the three axes of dimension. But then the whole thing forms a cube, and it's made of tetrahedrons. So you're looking at it. It's staring you in the face, and yet it has this magic happening to it. So that's the reason I built it 3D, because I wanted to know, I wanted to see it in 3D, because I'd read about the vehicle that the Merkaba is on a psychic level and on a spiritual level. And
it's nothing
when
like
you
a,
actually look
a
at
model
it and rotate
it
around.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
There's nothing like a model to make it real.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't have any of the beautiful stories that you and Brooks talk about. So I'm, you know, that's the part that I'm curious about, like how, like I built these things, I painted these things, I painted the shape, I've been meditating on it, and also what I see is the Star of David, both 2D and 3D,
mm-hmm.
because of the two tetrahedrons that are going the
right.
opposite way.
That's called a star tetrahedron when they're facing opposite directions.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so what that tells me is that the Star of David was borrowed from something much older, because the Flower of Life has been seen by Nassim Haramein on Abydos, on a column in Abydos, where there's a perfectly etched Flower of Life pattern in the stone on one of the columns.
It's actually in the Osirian behind Abydos.
Behind Abydos.
Right. There's another structure called the Osirian on top of which was built Abydos. And it's pretty well known by local historians that that Flower of Life pattern that was etched in the red granite was etched probably the 9th or 10th century. So it's post-construction.
Well,
and I agree,
also,
because if you look at that building as it sits today, it is quite a bit underground because there is that much sand that has been added to the desert. And this particular etching is at the top of the columns, not in a place that it would be if it were a place of honor in a temple. It would have been more towards the middle. So,
meaning what?
Meaning that, as Brooks has said, it was after the construction of the Osirian, probably much after it was buried beneath the sand and then rediscovered by, you know, nomads or spiritual seekers or whatever, and unearthed. You know, there's a big story, for example, around the Sphinx that is in the Cairo area on the Giza Plateau. And the Sphinx was buried in sand up to the neck. And a Arab who was a distant relative of the king, of the pharaoh, slept under the head of the Sphinx. And the story is a true story, because as he slept, he was given a message from the Sphinx that said, "If you will uncover me and sweep away all the sand around me, I will make you pharaoh." And the very next day, he set about to clear the Sphinx and uncover the entire body of this shape, of the Sphinx, and through a series of highly unusual circumstances and many surprises, this man did become Pharaoh of Egypt. So many places in Egypt are buried in the sand, and this is why the excavation in Egypt is so laborious and also so surprising, because sand doesn't leave much trace of what might be underneath it. So many things that are out there are not known until someone starts to dig on a hunch. You know, one of the greatest adventures of Abydos was the work of a woman who claims to have been part of a kingdom from a previous lifetime. And her name was known as Om Seti. And she came to work at Abydos, and after 30 or so years, the true excavators of that site began to listen to her when she said there was a garden here. And they dug and dug, and they found the garden. And there is much more to that story, but that's like a little tiny piece of it. So yes, the Flower of Life is ancient. And yes, it is found in various places all over the world. But what we will say here, and I'm sure Brooks will agree with me, is that this symbol, the Flower of Life, which is the circle of circles that people see, and certainly you can find it on my website as well, the circle of circles is far older than what our history is telling us about, that our current history is limited, and that the knowledge is older than that.
Yeah, and when you see it etched perfectly, because I've done it in a computer, and each slight mistake, as you add the circles, the errors will accumulate. And so on the outside edge, you're really running into some serious, mistakes.
Distortion.
Now, I do have a question for you, John. You say that you've meditated upon the Merkaba, but have you actually learned the meditation itself, the Merkaba meditation?
No, I haven't, and I don't have any stories to tell about it.
Well, we would encourage you.
I've just been working physically with it. That's been my initial approach.
Yes, we would encourage you to take the class.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be in your neck of the woods in November.
All right. Well, the reason I'm calling is because I've been working with the Merkaba, and you've been talking about it, and you've actually used it. So I'm intensely curious.
Excellent. Well, I hope to meet you in person in Calgary or Edmonton in November of this year when I'm back in that area.
Okay. All right.
I'll
see if I can plan the trip.
Sounds great.
Excellent.
All right.
Marvelous. All right, let's thank you very much, John, for the call. As always, we love to hear from you, and he has such great insight on more things than just art, I can tell you that. Let's go ahead and take a quick 4-minute break. We will do that, and then we'll come back and learn about who the inner guru is and what's really going on with the world right now. So don't go away. We will be back in about 4 minutes with more X-Squared Radio and our very fine guest, Maureen St. Germain.
Goodbye, Milky Way.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We are coming to you live, our final hour on September 23rd. We're live between 8 and 11 Eastern Time. Our AccuWindow forecast now in the very high 70s, about 79 degrees. Beautiful starry sky out tonight. I want to let you know that Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is now for sale in print on Amazon. You can also get it in Kindle. Those of you that are reading paperless, we commend you. Burns a lot less trees. We're new at it, so we're Kindle gardeners. If you like books in print, you can pick it up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, all the other online booksellers. Just put in Remembering the Future, or my name, Brooks Agnew. Let's see if we can get that book in the top 100 before we start doing the major marketing. The audiobook will be done this week, and then we will post it on the website at rememberingthefuturebook.com or at xsquaredradio.com, and you'll be able to access that. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Also, as you're preparing for your fall schedule, why don't you see if you resonate with the idea of going to Egypt? Not by yourself, not with a tour group. Try going with us. Go with me and my co-sponsor, John Riley. If you're interested in that, if you resonate with that at all, click on the link at X Squared Radio. We only have a couple seats left. The reason I'm even mentioning it tonight is because we discussed it this week and thought that maybe there was one or two people out there that had not heard about it. Maybe they listen to the program, but they don't go to the website much. And they're wondering about this call, this strange feeling that they have, that they need to go to Egypt. Well, think about going to Egypt sailing the Nile. Not with a big tour group on one of these big multi-hundred person yachts, but on a small boat with 18 people. Think about sleeping on the deck, looking up at the Milky Way, laying parallel with the Nile above you. Think about accessing islands that are virtually unchanged after thousands of years of civilization growing up on either bank around them. And see if that resonates with you. If it does, click on the link at xsquaredradio.com and give us a contact. As you are preparing yourself for the upcoming winter, for what you might perceive are cataclysms or calamities that are coming down the pike. Certainly, we are seeing no small number of very strange weather anomalies. Don't be caught unprepared out on the road. You don't want to get caught all dressed for summertime and having no way to feed yourself or provide water if you should happen to slide off in a storm, a flood, or a freak snowstorm like they had in Montana Friday. Go ahead and get a hold of 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust, retired firefighter, and his partner, who's an active EMT, have put together what we think is one of the most premier emergency preparedness sites on the web. Good prices, great packages, great shipping, lots of information, books, training, all kinds of contact numbers, ways that you can prepare yourself in advance so you don't have to be part of the emergency response from the recipient end. You can take care of yourself, and maybe you can take care of a few friends and neighbors. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our guest tonight is Maureen St. Germain. Her website is MaureenStGermain.com. Those of you that are accessing X2Radio.com already have her link. Click on it. Go there. I highly recommend picking up one of everything. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No. Seriously. is pick up the Merkaba 2 CD, because it goes with the book Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. We're bringing you time travel and the science behind a discovery that Maureen made way back in the late 90s with her first, one of her first books, You Are the Genie in the Bottle. It was a discovery called the Phoenix Sequence. We talk about it in the book. I go into great detail. I derived it independently from the math so that you can see how it works, how it functions, and why, actually, it can be applied to the law of attraction. Make yourself an integral part of the equation of the law of attraction and unleash the abundance of the universe for yourself and those you love. Welcome back, Maureen.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back. It's been lovely talking about these great things, the Merkaba and the travel to Tibet and the inner guru.
Well, you know, one of the things we discovered in Tibet is we were at 18,500 feet, which is higher than I could ever imagine being. But we made it. We were there because somebody fixed the bus. I'm not exactly sure who that might be. It might have been me.
We know perfectly well it was you.
And we were standing there looking at the Ring of Power. This is a line of mountains, the Everest and K2 and unbelievable mountains at the very edge of the world. And we realized that it's connected to a grid that goes around the earth. Tell us about the Christ Consciousness Grid.
The Christ Consciousness Grid is a web that looks a bit like a spider web. I believe it is an icosa dodecahedron. That is an icosahedron that's nested into a dodecahedron. I believe the ratio between the crosses is in phi. This particular grid sits 60 miles above the earth. Many people have seen it. I had a dear friend who, when he was in the Navy 30 years ago, would lay on the flight deck at night where there was no ambient light, and he could see this grid. I've seen it when I've been in Alaska where there's no ambient light. So it is possible to see it. This grid holds the energy of the perfected human, and this grid was completed in order to assist mankind, much like the Merkaba, in becoming our most evolved self. So if we're surrounded by an energy field that radiates the most evolved choice, it's easier to say yes to the God choice because that vibration is there. So it makes it easier to make your ascension, easier to do the right thing, whatever that is.
You know, we have various scriptures that refer to the man Jesus And he accomplished the title of Christ while he was alive here on the earth. So when we talk about this Christ consciousness, we are really accessing, for real, the energy that Jesus himself said was available to all of us. You know, he
didn't say, "These things and greater shall you do."
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's right. He was the way.
And to be fair, we could also call it the Buddha consciousness or the Muhammad consciousness.
Yes, to be fair, we could do that. That's right. And as you master it, or as you learn to connect to it and be, and you're touched by it, there's a change that comes over you. And a lot of times, I know I call this, I may not be naming this correctly, I call it an ascension experience. There is such a mighty change of heart. I didn't go through it until I was 52 years old. And I got to tell you, I was a Sunday school teacher for 30 years. And I taught very advanced concepts in the scriptures. I know the scriptures. I understand the scriptures. I certainly have felt the Spirit. I've prayed and received answers to prayers. But that was a physical change that changed my physical body. It changed my physical connection with my own body. And I can tell you that what Jesus said is exactly true. You can move mountains. You can build companies. You can achieve and access this abundance that's in the universe by accessing this grid of energy, by connecting. Oh, by the way, I want to ask you a question. You know, you say you know people who have seen the grid. You've seen the grid. It is connected to the earth, right? It's actually latched to the earth by these mountains that are around the earth. It doesn't rotate around the earth, right? It's like an actual grid that's connected to Mother Earth.
Right. And you use an interesting word, latched. I don't get the sense that there's a latching, as much as I get the sense like the boundary of an electron within the atom, and you don't see a boundary around that, yet the atom generally stays in place in a range around that space. So I see the Christ consciousness grid as being energetically latched, perhaps, or connected in a way more like a magnet connection, so that there's a pull that keeps the grid in a certain place around the earth the same. You know, for years and years, there were big holes around the Middle East, and the grid didn't move as the earth rotated separately from the earth. It moved with the rotation of the earth, so that the hole over the Middle East stayed the hole over the Middle East until that was finished and repaired. So I guess we're in agreement, but I don't see it quite as strong a word as latched.
Well, I think that's, yeah, maybe I didn't use the right word, because I really like your association of it as like an electron. Like, it has a probability of its location, which is very similar to an electron shell around a stable molecule. But one of the things, or a stable element, one of the things that we can do with elements like neon is that we can add power to it. We could jump those electrons to the next higher level. And when the electrons move back and forth between the higher level and its base, or what we call ground state level, it emits light.
Mm-hmm. So it makes a perfect analogy, doesn't it, that we could have a grid or an invisible barrier, or in this case, a bonus as a barrier, because it actually is radiating an energetic that allows us to move into our perfected state, or encourages us, perhaps, is a better word, encourages us to move into our perfected state. You know, in the book, Beyond the Flower of Life, I spent a whole chapter explaining the Christ consciousness grid. And one of the things that happened to me is I wanted to know where this came from. And I meditated on this for years and years. And finally the answer came. And the answer was that it had come from the future. And I thought, well, That's all well and good. I want to know more. I want to know where the Ascended Masters got it from and how did they, you know, bring it here. And the answer was they built a bridge to the version of the future that says we made our ascension. And that grid already existed in that place. And all they had to do was copy it. So the grid that we have over the earth is a replica of the grid that already exists over the earth in our ascended state.
Well, you mentioned that there was a hole over the Middle East. I assume that that hole wasn't there because of something in the dirt. That hole was there because
that would be a good assumption. And the answer is, yeah, that's true. The hole was because we kept blowing it out from all of the anger and hatred and misalignment and man's inhumanity to man in that part of the world. And you
notice I did say
we.
The point that I'm trying to make here is that the hole existed not because of a relationship with the earth itself, with the dirt of the earth, but with the people of the earth, with the consciousness of the earth in that location. The consciousness of the earth in that location darkened the energy so much that it created a virtual hole in the Christ consciousness grid. In other words, the electrons, or the energy of what we're talking about, this grid, avoided that area because there was no light in it. But what happens if the earth, that is to say, the humans on the earth, become awakened, become activated with the Merkaba, learn about, and we're going to talk about this in a second, the guru within. What happens then is that we can jump the grid to the next energy level, and the earth goes through the metamorphosis.
All possible in my version of the reality, and very likely in our lifetime.
There you have it. Okay, let's talk about the inner guru. Who is that?
The inner guru is your higher self. And your higher self is the version of you that's fully plugged into God. Now, the metaphor I give people to help them understand this is imagine inviting someone to your home that you think very highly of. Let's say the Dalai Lama. And I call you up and I say, Brooks, you know, I'd like to know if the Dalai Lama could stay with you. He's coming through your part of the East Coast, and he really needs a place to stay, and he wants to be low-key, low-profile. Can he stay with you? What's your answer?
Yeah, I'll sleep on the floor. You can have
my bed. Exactly. No matter, and is there anything else you need to know before I get off the phone?
What does he like to eat?
Exactly. And when is he coming, and how long does he want to stay? All of his answers, all of Brooks' answers, were on the side of yes. The possibility of saying no didn't occur to him. This is what happens when you get fully plugged into your higher self. Your higher self is the version of you that is so plugged into God that the possibility of saying no to God hurts you. So when I say to people at 5D there isn't free will, it doesn't mean you don't have choices. It means that the possibility of saying no to God doesn't even occur to you, and that the not God choice is part of the free will zone and is permitted here in 3D. When you plug into 5D, your inner guru, you align yourself so well with the part of you that's plugged into God that the not God choice doesn't occur to you. So your choices then become one of all the possibilities that will move you towards your ascension. No,
well, when I think of the word guru, I think of someone who is experienced, who is an expert, who is one to whom you go for answers or guidance for how to do something right the first time without so much trial and error, like a financial guru or a mathematical guru or even a spiritual guru. So when we talk about the guru within, is this being experienced? Does it bring the experience of the ages with it?
At the level of the inner guru, experience is not a word that is useful because there is no element of time to need to have experience. So all versions of all possibilities coexist And the one that is most useful to you is the one that stands out as the most appealing and the most desirable, much like in the Celestine prophecy, when it came time to make choices, one version, one choice of the fork in the road seemed more full of light and more energetic and more alive than the other.
Well, it also, in the Celestine prophecy, it was laced with the power of coincidence. Things that happened or turned up, choices that came up that were one in a million. I mean, just strange things, notes, phone calls, directions, a car waiting, those kinds of things. It's sort of like, if a fork comes in the road, take it.
Well, I know that's a clever saying, but I can tell you that when you're connected to your inner guru, the choice occurs at the mental level or at the ego level. But when you ask your higher self about a choice, one version becomes so clear and so authentic for you that it becomes easy to make that choice over the others. This is done through practice, and it is a technique that I teach on how to connect with your higher self and how to get that level of connection that is so pure, so clear, that you can rely on it for with your life.
Sure.
You know, one of my students had a job interview the day of 9/11 where she had to go through the World Trade Center right about the time of the disaster. And she woke up early that morning and thought, I don't want to go. And you don't tell someone for a job interview that you really want, that you don't want to come. So she called and said, is there any way I could take this job interview over the phone? She had just completed her class with me. She got the message. She understood. I have plenty of those kind of stories. I don't want to bore you with them, but the higher self will put you in the place you need to be with the knowledge you need to have to deal with any circumstance. You know, I'll tell a very interesting story. I was on the MARTA one time. I was in Atlanta coming from the airport to my host's home, and she called me and left me a voicemail saying, this is many years ago, and left me a voicemail saying, I can't get to the airport. I'm caught up in a meeting. Is there any way you can take this? You know, the MARTA is the Atlanta Rapid Transit, like a subway, only it's above ground. Is there any way you can take the MARTA? Because then I can just break away from work and pick you up and drop you off and only take a half an hour away instead of trying to cross Atlanta traffic and be tied up for hours. So I said, sure, you don't have no problem. But I travel with seminar stuff, and I have, you know, some substantial suitcases that I carry with me. But I thought it would be fine, and I'm used to traveling that way. I had lived in New York City once before and thought it would be easy and that I could make a phone call from the platform. She said, make sure you call me when you get on the train that's going in the right direction. And the exact train I needed came along, and I hadn't found a phone on the platform, so I thought, I'll just get on it. This is long before I had a cell phone, and I got on the train. There were a couple of women that got on the train, and then a very tall man, maybe 6'4", maybe 250 pounds, got on. And the two women got off. I didn't think anything of it. And then the train left the station. And this large man came over to me and demanded money. And I said, well, I'm not giving you any money. And he demanded money again. And I said, I'm not going to give you any money. And then he had demanded money again. And I thought, you know, if he had a cell phone, I'd be happy to give him a couple of bucks for letting me use his cell phone. So I said, well, do you have a cell phone? And he looked at me like I was out of my mind and said, do I have a cell phone? No, I don't have a cell phone. And I said, well, I'm not going to give you any money. And he insisted again, give me some money. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I mean no disrespect, but I'm having trouble understanding you. You know, my ears are a little plugged up. Are you asking me anything different than what you just asked me 2 minutes ago? Just give me some money. Just then the train pulled into the station. He got out, and I remember looking at him and saying, you know, you might try sales. You're pretty persistent. I was never afraid. entire South said, although that man was a bully, and though although he probably would have stolen from me if I would have given him the money, he wasn't going to harm me, and my higher self knew that. So I could actually have that very odd conversation with him. I did get off the subway at that point and make my phone call, and I did break down and buy a cell phone after.
Well, that was very strange and auspicious. Something happened to the phone just as she was telling the story. It sounds like some electrical interference. But that's okay. In a few seconds, we'll have her back on. It's not a problem, unless it happened at the studio, in which case, if anybody lives over there in California, look toward paradise and see if you see a mushroom cloud. If you don't, then all will be well. Everything will be connected back up in just a couple of minutes. Let me go ahead and give the telephone numbers out again so that we have about maybe 20 minutes left. 530-413-4511 if you're off planet. We have gotten some calls on that line. 530-413-4515 if you're east of Earth. And 530-413-4520 if you're west of Earth. If you're out there or getting ready to leave your computer, you can get the program on your cell phone. You won't be able to speak, but you'll be able to listen. 712-432-0075, and then use the access code 318-116-pound, and you'll be able to listen to the program. My guest tonight is Maureen St. Germain, and her website is maureenstgermain.com. Every once in a while, strange anomalies happen while we're here on X Squared Radio. I actually had my studio in Western Kentucky struck by lightning when I was on the air one time. It made everything go down. Everything came back up again, but the guest kept right on talking, and everybody heard what was going on live. So it was no big deal. I came back on and said, sorry, I was gone. He said, what? We didn't even know you were gone. So it's kind of cool, interesting. As soon as we get the phone line straightened back out again, we'll have her back on. Now we're trying to call her, and her line is busy, probably because all her friends are calling her. Maureen, Maureen, I heard you on X Squared Radio. Yeah. Well, hang up with her right now, so that we can reach her, okay? By the way, I want to let you know that Monday and Tuesday of this week, we happened to spend some time in Washington, D.C. It was informative. I got to spend 2 days with 8 congressmen, 1 congresswoman, and 1 day with 2 more congressmen. Congressman Dennis Kucinich was very nice. We talked about banking. And I spent some time with the Secretary of Transportation, Ray LaHood, which was informative. I'm not going to give you the details of that tonight. I just will let you know that it was interesting. And we learned a lot, and so today, about small business trying to build electric vehicles in the United States and how successful we have been and how successful we wanted to be to bring you, the American people, an affordable electric vehicle. Now, we do try to keep the two things separate.
It's quite that scary. Looks like I scared the producer.
We're connected again. It turns out somebody between here and the other side of the world tripped over an extension cord. Nothing serious. No, nothing nefarious. Everything is cool. Welcome back to the program. I was just filling in everybody about my recent trip to Washington, D.C., and my time with the congressmen and one woman and with the Secretary of Transportation. Just brief stuff, nothing serious or heavy. Just want to let people know we are making progress, and not to worry. Very soon, early next year, we'll have affordable electric vehicles in your garage. So welcome back to the program. Sorry for the technical difficulties.
I'm happy to be back, and I'm glad no one is injured.
I was telling him about, I had the individual that just original, one of the original writers about 2012, way back in the 50s, Jose Arguelles, come on the program. And we were talking, and outside my studio developed a terrible thunderstorm, and my studio was struck by lightning while we were talking, and he was just getting ready to begin this long description of Pakal's tomb lid and how he got to see it for the, he was the first Westerner to see it after they uncovered it, and what it meant. And I got struck by lightning, so I was knocked off the air. So I'm frantically powering everything back up, rebooting everything. I finally get back online, and he's just finishing up his discussion. Nobody on the air even knew that we had got hit by lightning. So it was very...
That's amazing.
We have been talking for the better part of 3 hours about the Merkava meditation, about connecting to your higher self. And the skill level, I was going to use the word skill level. Let me see. The connection that it gives you with things independent of time. This is where my whole idea of time travel came in. And the way that I approach it in the book is not the way H.G. Wells approaches it. And what it can do for the average person as far as connecting them with information that they need in order to get the most done in a single mortal life that you can. You know, we don't want to go through this over and over again. It's a little bit of a drag to get caught up in the commercialism of mortality and realize that you're going to make it to the end of the game and your garage is not full of the proper amount of stuff. So therefore, you're not successful. What we're trying to tell you tonight is that has nothing to do with it. The guy that dies with the most toys does not win. That's not what it's about. There are teachers, there are examples for us throughout history that showed us using this access that we're talking about tonight that Maureen teaches in her classes is what it's about.
Yes, and if you learn the Merkaba, your ability to have this awareness of what you need to know and a connection that will take out the fear factor and put it out of business doesn't mean your life is perfect. What it does mean is you have what you need to go with the flow.
Right. And you also have what you need to make it flow. You know, only things that float downstream are dead. Living things swim upstream. And it's not easy. If it was easy, life wouldn't be worth it. So don't worry that the current's going the other way. If the current's going the other way, you're doing it the right way.
That's funny. Yeah, I like to tell people you can use the wind to sail in any direction. Just turn your rudder and adjust your sail, and the wind will take you where you want to go. But you have to know the wind, and you have to know how to adjust. And that's the benefit of the Merkaba. It tells you which way the wind is blowing and helps you adjust your rudder so you know which way to aim and so on.
That's right. You know, it's interesting. You can't spit into the wind, but you can sail into the wind.
Yeah.
You take an apparent angle, that is figured out by experience of knowing how to haul that boat in and tack against the wind to make progress when it's blowing. And believe me, it blows. You guys are out there experiencing it right now. Well, don't hunker down. Don't blow down the street like a tumbleweed. Figure out how to put the sail up and sail against it.
Mm-hmm. And tacking in the wind is simply taking a zigzag pattern, which means you're making progress because it's just like the switchbacks of a mountain. You don't go straight up. You zigzag around that till you get where you want to go.
Oh, that's a really good analogy. I like that. Because, you know, when we look from where we are now back to the past, it looks pretty much like a straight line. Oh, gee, I'm here now. And I was there. and you could kind of draw, at least mentally, a line between where you were and where you are. But it doesn't necessarily work out that way. It's kind of a zigzag path. Well, how do you figure that out? You don't. You put your intention out there in the future with your dream very clearly envisioned. Let the universe vibrate with what it will vibrate with, and the stepping stones will make themselves apparent for you. But they're not going to carry you there. You still have to walk. You still got to do.
One of the things that I talk about in the Genie in the Bottle is the idea that you choose a point beyond your heart's desire and tack to that. So you vibrate between the present and the future, the yet unknown future, that proves you got what you wanted. And what happens is the possibility exists and the experience of today exists. You offer no resistance because you're agreeing with both and aware that this new possibility is also true. And that vibration together produces the third event, which is your heart's desire. And that is the mathematics of the Phoenix sequence.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. When you talk about the event beyond your event, let's use an example so that people get a clear picture of what you're talking about. You
okay.
want to you want to create a documentary, a film, and you have no idea how to go about it, but you got a pretty good idea what the film's going to be about and what you want it to say. What kind of after event would you have people envision and concentrate on so that that documentary becomes a reality?
You'd imagine what award it would win because it was so fabulous and accomplished what you wanted in such a fabulous way. And you see yourself receiving the award and thanking all the people who helped you do it. And you focus on an event. Now, there are three elements that I tell people they need when they focus on the quote, event after the event. So the film has occurred because you won an award. So it's a done deal if you see yourself getting an award on it. It also backdoors all of your resistance about how you're going to make it happen and instead puts you in the zone where it has already happened. Now the three events you need, the three elements you need are an element of time, an element of emotion, and an element of a linear progression, the point between two points. So what I use is I say it's like 2D, 3D, and 4D. 4D is the emotion. 2D is looking into the past and saying it had to have occurred because I'm now sitting in this award seat. And the element of time is you seeing it happening as if it's the present. That means you hear yourself say, in present tense, the conversation you would have with at least one person. Now, what I have found with all the manifestation work that's out there, that if a person simply imagines it, it's not enough. But if you allow yourself to be in a personal conversation, that anchors it into your version of the reality. It anchors into your consciousness, and your mind seeks to produce it, with the net result of the outcome occurring. And I'll give you a lovely example of this that occurred to me in the early, early years of developing this theory. Back in 1994, I entered a contest to name a function room. And the contest was with the Southampton Princess, the Princess Hotel, a luxury hotel. It was available only, this contest was available only to meeting planners or their CEOs. I was head of an international trade association at the time, so I was eligible to enter. I was probably one of 500 people that were eligible to enter. The grand prize was a free trip to the Southampton Princess. Now, I went into meditation, and I imagined that I was already in the prize. So I was in the hotel and then at the beach because I had gotten there on this free trip. And then I asked what name would cause that to occur. and I was given a name for this function room. And this function room was built for doctors who like to make big presentations that have floating microphones and cameras and state-of-the-art everything. I wrote this fabulous marketing plan for them along with the name, and I was sure it would win because it was so fabulous. And they announced the winner, and it wasn't me. And I remember thinking, that's so odd. I wonder why I didn't win. And then I thought, well, the answer's obvious. They needed that meeting planner to come to their hotel so that she would bring her convention to the hotel. The name was rather ordinary, and I thought, I could see why the hotel company might pick this ordinary name so that this person would win and bring her business there. So I was fine with that, and I forgot about it, let it completely go. And then a year later, I was invited on a FAM trip. And a FAM trip is a familiarization trip. A company that I had known about had asked me if I would go with them to the, on the West Coast, Acapulco. And sounded like a great idea, so I said yes. And I was very busy, and I didn't pay any attention to the details. And I was told that the trip was free, and I had to pay for the taxes, which was like $100, but that was it. And I show up with this group. We get on the bus. We're on our way to the hotel. We're already in Acapulco. And I turned to someone, and I said, by the way, what hotel are we staying at? And they said, oh, we're staying at the Acapulco Princess. And I thought, that's fantastic. Princess hotels are just the very best. We're going to have a great time. I got to my room, and there was a brochure on my bed. And as I opened the brochure, I realized that their function rooms were identical to the ones they had in Bermuda. Well, that's no surprise. Big hotel companies use the same floor plans, the same architectural drawings for their hotels in various locations around the world. No surprise there. And then I'm thinking, I wonder what they named their function room. They named it the same name that I had submitted.
So my friend
said to me, well, did you complain? Did you say, you know, you deserved a free trip? And I said, I got the free trip.
Right. You got the free trip.
So I manifested it. That's when I began to understand that a detached attachment would cause it to happen regardless of what you did next. So I was attached to the outcome very clearly, thinking I was going to be the winner and that I was going to achieve this prize. But when I didn't win, I didn't go into judgment. I didn't go into anger. I didn't cry, that's not fair. The thing was rigged. I didn't do any of that. Instead, I stayed centered and just said, well, I could see why they might have to do that. That seems reasonable, and let it go. And the universe surprised me because it came out just the way I described it.
Yes, and the
I was thread. On the beach in the hotel that named their function room the name I had given them, and
the
it was pathway the identical floor plan.
Was nowhere near what you envisioned it would be, the future thread that you had drawn.
So we know it worked.
Yet the conclusion was still reached.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's so cool. I'm going to ask you, how important is that release?
I think it is the pivotal issue, because if we keep our thread of attachment, it's a bit like being in a restaurant and ordering your meal and then seeing the waiter deliver something to the guy next to you and looking at that going, wow, that looks great. Call the waiter. Come here. Bring the waiter over here. I want what he got. So the waiter says, no problem. I'll change it. There's plenty of time. And they go in and they change it. And then they deliver something to the guy on the other side. And you look at that. You go, oh, I think I like that even better. So you call the waiter back, change the order again. Then this goes on for two or three more times. Pretty soon the waiter's going to say, you know what? You let me know when you make up your mind. And then I will deliver.
Right.
Yeah. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like you got to let go and let it come in. Otherwise, you're constantly changing your order. The other thing that happens is the takeaways. When you place your order and then you say, you know, I want to meet a really great guy, and I want to meet him, and he's going to be handsome, and he's going to be charming, and he's going to be fun, and he's going to fall in love with me. Oh, but there aren't that many great guys out there. And, you know, my girlfriend, she just met one. She's probably got the last one, you know? That's the takeaway. That's the one that says there isn't enough. We do that one all the time. when we begin to recognize that we live in an abundant universe and that there's plenty of everything that we could possibly imagine, all we have to do is turn the page and say, I can have that. Why not?
You know, in the very beginning of the program, we talked about putting energy out there, letting it ring, and then whatever will resonate with it in the universe will resonate with it, but then you got to listen for that to come back. I just got it. When you release, it's the equivalent of ringing the bell and then taking your hand off the bell so it can ring. If you leave your hand on the bell, it's going to make a dull thud. Nothing's going to happen. You have to let it ring.
Right. So you're clear on your desire, but you are fearless in how it will occur. And you accept that the universe will fill your order in the most efficient entropy type of way. So using the principle of entropy, you cause the least amount of friction by asking for your outcome and deciding how it will feel and what the 3D conversation will look like, rather than defining, I want a white Volvo.
Sure. Yeah, in physics we call this the Lagrangian. It's the pathway where the least amount of energy is expended. In other words, it could be called the path of entropy, and in some senses it is. But instead of decaying to a zero state, what happens is all the energy is allowed to occur, and those energies that will constructively interfere with each other will add to one another, and those that destructively interfere, like in a previous conversation we had, we talked about noise cancellation headphones, like that. But what will rise out of the chaos, as it were, is something of order. And that is what you have to listen for. So in some sense, yes, you are letting it go through entropy. But in another sense, it is self-organizing because of the energy that you have put into the equation.
Yes. And speaking of energy, one of the best ways to use energy is to convert your garbage into fuel. Just like in Back to the Future, when he loaded up that DeLorean with all that garbage, I will say to all of my classes, take a moment, and when you're really feeling frustrated or anger, and allow yourself to feel it briefly, and then allow yourself to go to that special outcome, that after event, and use the energy you are currently feeling and throw it into that. And you've literally transformed that negative energy to a positive expression of the same energy, and run your movie of your after event and watch how you shifted your consciousness into this energy that always fuels your outcome.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I can't believe 3 hours has gone by, Maureen. It just happens every time we get together. We just lose track of time. I want to let everybody know your website again, MaureenSaintGermain.com, MaureenSaintGermain.com, MaureenSaintGermain.com. You can just go to xSquaredRadio.com, click on the link there. You'll see it. It'll take you to Transformational Enterprises. Of course, I recommend the Merkaba 2 CD, practice for a while, then sign up for one of Maureen's classes, put some fine tuning on that, and get your Merkaba activated.
I'd also like to invite people to try out some of our essential oil blends that were channeled by one of my business partners, who is a aromatherapist and was given these magical formulas by guidance through Mary Magdalene. And we have blends to clear anger, to clear disappointment, to clear abandonment, to clear shame, to clear fear, to clear terror, to clear longing, and anchor in its place, understanding, empowerment, acceptance, compassion and letting go and freedom and so on. It's such an exciting collection of essential oil blends that in an instant will clear an energetic that you are feeling in the moment. And I'd like to tell a quick story. One day I was at a national meeting and there were a lot of people there and I was in the ballroom with probably 2,000 people and I just was so uncomfortable. I didn't feel right. I didn't like what was going on and there was too many people that were connecting with each other and kind of ignoring me and I was so uncomfortable with it. I went back to my room and I was kind of feeling a little bit just, you know, kind of crabby. And I reached into my bag of Aromandalis, that's the brand that we have, and I pulled out a bottle, not knowing what it was, and put it on, and I instantly felt better. And then I looked at the bottle to see what it was that I had chosen. And the name of the oil was called Crystal Elohim, and what does it replace of a human wound? Was not belonging. And what does it fill it in with? It restores original blueprint and DNA. And without even knowing, I was able to tap into that energy and feel it. So we have lots of tools on our website. When Brooke says buy one of everything, he's not kidding. We have a lot of things to help you on your ascension path, and we'd love to be of service to you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you so much, Maureen, for coming on.
It has been my deep pleasure and a lot of fun. It's always fun to talk to you, Brooke.
Well, I appreciate it. It is for me, too. To talk to you, and I look forward to connecting with you in person before too long. I think we're doing an event, hopefully, if we get the logistics worked out, an event in April, on April 15th in Louisville. So for
hi.
Those of you that are not from the coast, you are living somewhere close to 73% of the rest of the nation, which is Louisville, Kentucky. You're within driving distance. So you can make it, and I think we're going to have William Henry and myself and Maureen St. Germain and Sandra Sabatini and some others, and it's going to be a great event. We'll let you know some more on it as we get closer. Right now it is a point in time, and I'm already envisioning the after events. All right. Thank you so much, Maureen. Have a wonderful week.
And you as well, and thank you again to you and your guests, your fabulous audience. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, Earth Explorers, we will see you next Sunday here on X Squared Radio. That's the 30th of September, last day of the month. And then in October, we've got some tremendous guests lined up. In November, we do have the trip to Egypt. If you feel the call, you feel like you have a desire to go to Egypt, you want to go see it, not with the hustle and bustle of a big tour group, but a small and personal and very enlightening gateway tour, then join us. 18 of us going, and we have a couple seats left. Just click on the link at X Squared Radio. We will see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.